Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. It's Freestyle Friday, and I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Frankie Lovato from Norwalk, Ohio, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 8th, 2012, episode 421. This episode is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. Good morning, Horse World.
I can't take it anymore!
Thank God it's Friday!
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We worked all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around.
Howdy, Frankie.
Howdy, Glenn. Yes, it's Belmont Eve. Pretty exciting stuff, isn't it?
I got to tell you, I couldn't think of anybody I would rather co-host this show with, except for Jamie. I have to say that or she won't come back. except for Jamie, that I'd rather co-host with today on Belmont Eve than you.
Well, thank you so much, Glenn. It's great to be here. And nothing against you, but I miss Jamie, too.
Well, I can understand that. I think the audience does too. But rest assured, I did hear from her. She is flying home from Portugal today or early tomorrow morning, I think, and will be back on the show next Tuesday. So everybody can rest assured she hasn't quit. She is coming back. At least that's what she told me.
Well,
how are
great.
You, Frankie?
I'm doing great, Glenn. It's a beautiful day. We've had an amazing week of weather here in Northern Ohio, and things are great. Popcorn's good. Sandy's doing great. You know, life is good.
And how is the pony popcorn? Is popcorn really fat right now, or are we on weight control still?
We are on weight control. He got his checkup about a month ago, and the vet came out and actually the vet was pleased with his weight, and he's been on a bit of a diet, and you know, so. You know, we're progressing. We're doing. We're getting better. So, but he's still a little fat.
Poor popcorn. Well,
yeah.
And then did I see a while back that you were getting a horse for yourself, or were you picking up a horse for someone else? It was something on Facebook about getting a horse.
Yes.
Or thoroughbred.
It's actually a great story. As you know, Sandy is a certified therapeutic riding instructor through PATH, and we have a program called Stampede of Dreams, therapeutic riding program here in Norwalk. And a friend of ours, a very good friend, an assistant trainer to Mike Stidham there in the Midwest, actually in Chicago at the moment. But I used to ride quite a bit for them, and her name is Hillary Pridham. She's the assistant trainer. And the story, try not to drag it out too far, but it's a horse I used to ride for them. He's 11 years old now, but he's retired. She actually bought him as he went through the claiming ranks. She followed his career, and when it looked like he was about time for retirement, she wanted to be sure he had a good home. So she purchased the horse personally and sent him down there to Ocala, where he got to be a horse for 3 years. And his nature is so kind. He's such a gentle horse. that she thought that he'd make a great therapeutic riding horse. And long story short, I'm trying to keep this brief, but we have him now here in Norwalk, Ohio, and he's starting his training to become a therapeutic riding horse for our program.
So, oh, congratulations. What a great story.
Yeah, it really is. And he's such a cool horse. He was owned by Josephine Abercrombie from Abercrombie & Finch. Also known as Pin Oak Stable. They're quite a big, large stable in the thoroughbred horse racing industry. And he was by Red Ransom out of Val de Pilmare. He's made over $250,000. He's won 9 races. He's no slouch either. But I do remember him as a 2-year-old. And I won on him. I got a picture, a win picture. So now I'm not sitting on his back now, but it's a different win picture.
Well, that's terrible. How cool is that, that you actually rode him and won on him? And that's just neat stuff.
Yeah. Well, who says there isn't
karma, huh, Frankie?
I think so. I mean, I think so. I'd like to believe there is. And you know, again, you know, this is a shout out to Hillary Pridham for taking this horse, all the responsibilities of him to get him to this point for his new career. So, you know, when you hear stories in the thoroughbred industry, they're not always nice and glorified. But, you know, this is certainly a case where there's a lot of goodness out there as well. So,
well, we're gonna be hearing one of those today. And Jennifer's going to tell us what's coming up on today's show.
On today's Kentucky Performance Products Freestyle Friday edition, located fore and aft of Clever Conversations with our official adopted bug, Callie Francois, and OTTB owner of nearly celebrity status, Madison Scott, will be the world premiere of Horse Husbands International Unnatural Horsemanship Conference, a once-in-a-lifetime event brought to you via live interweb. This conference is brought to you for entertainment purposes only. Please don't try what you're about to hear at home.
And consult your doctor.
Yeah. Call your vet. Thank you, Jennifer. I forgot about Unnatural Horsemanship, the association that Frankie and I started to fatten up our pony.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. That's funny. Thank you, Jennifer. We have a full show today. Basically, what she just said comes down to, we have a full show today, and we're going to start with our Daily Whinny. Well, first of all, I want to remind everybody that the Blog Talk chat is open if you want to join us. And there's Glenn's in there already. So if you want to, just go to Blog Talk Radio. You'll find Horses in the Morning link there on the homepage. And you can click on that, and you'll see the chat on that page. And I also posted it on Facebook, so you'll find a link on Facebook as well if you would like to join in the conversation this morning. If any of you would like to talk to Frankie today, our call-in number is 347-637-3238. And my Daily Whinny goes out to Shauna Kroll, who has our adopted standardbred racer by the name of Wildfire. And she lets us know what Wildfire is doing all the time. Well, Wildfire won in 155 the other day. She went out in front, and My Revenuer sat behind her the whole mile and gave a good shot at her. But in the stretch, she prevailed. And she says, thanks for cheering her on. It's greatly appreciated. Wildfire is an appropriate name for that horse, Frankie, because Shauna has a winner there. That horse is winning all the time.
That's fantastic. Good for Shauna.
Yeah, we have a lot of listeners, actually, that are standardbred racing business. They listen in the barns, and so our shout-out to all our standardbred racing fans. We're going to give you a shout-out today on this flat track racing day here on Horses in the Morning. And now it's your turn, Frankie.
My turn? Okay.
Oh, hold on 1 second. Got to play the music first.
I danced to that just now. I could have missed out if I'd have just started talking, but... Well, my daily shout-out is going to go out in light of the Belmont Stakes being tomorrow and someone that's a personal friend of mine. I want to give a shout-out to former Hall of Fame jockey Julie Crone. And there's two reasons why. Well, one is because of the Belmont. She's the only female to have won a Triple Crown event, and she's the only female jockey that's in the Hall of Fame. But... What's bigger than that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. what's even bigger than that, that she is going to join me for my jockey camp this summer and assist me. She's going to fly in from California and spend the complete 3 days of this very special event. So I'm very excited about that. But I'm just so grateful. I just wanted to give her a shout out and a thank you for doing that.
Well, that's terrific. How much fun is that going to be? That'll be terrific.
It's going to be crazy. I think you should come. I really think you and Jamie should come do the show here.
I was just going to say, if you think I should come be a jockey, I'm a little big for that, Frank. But I have to lose some weight and like get in shape. Two things there.
You know,
but
we actually.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say that we actually, some of what I call our students or participants aren't always wanting to be jockeys. Some of them are interested in another career in racing. We kind of do it. It's almost like a retreat. It's racing, bottom to top, and just a great experience, learning experience. And we've had people that are interested in just auditing, just watching. So think about it.
I could be a watcher. That I could do.
We'll get you on the Equisizer. You can do the radio
After
show.
About 10 minutes of that, I'll be falling off. What are you talking about? It was funny, Callie, our adopted bug, who's supposed to be calling in as soon as she gets off a horse there at Saratoga this morning, she said she'd try and give a call. She said, if I don't call by 9:15, it means I fell off. Okay, that's bad. But she works for Todd Fletcher up there, riding his horses on the track every morning and is enjoying that. But she sent me a little note. I said, well, you know, Frankie's going to be co-hosting. Do you know Frankie? And she said, yeah, I know Frankie. I've had the pain and pleasure of his wonderful little invention. So you're loved and hated all at the same time, all across this country, with thanks to the Equisizer.
You know, that's a statement that, you know, just so people understand, just so the listeners understand there, she's speaking of the Equisizer and how, well, she was a student in the North American Racing Academy, where the Equisizer is a very big part of that program. And Chris McCarron, who leads the academy, he puts them through a grueling training session on the Equisizers. But it's kind of funny, too. I mean, you've seen it. You've tried it, Glenn. I mean, people think, they don't realize how difficult it can be to be in the jockey position. And then you start pumping on the Equisizer's neck, and it's just like, whoa, how do you do this?
That's true. Yeah, if you go 5 minutes your first workout, you're doing good. You've ridden the horse for a while. And that's exactly what it's meant to do. It's meant to help people, you know, get in condition when they can't be riding a horse all the time.
Well, specifically when you think of, when we don't have access to horses 24/7, and many of us don't, you know, for a jockey, the Equisizer gives them the opportunity to ride as many races to stay racing fit that you may not be able to ride, you know. So it's important to have a tool that you can keep maintaining your fitness, your balance, and your rhythm.
Well, while we're waiting for Callie to give us a call here today, a couple things that I need to go over, a couple housekeeping things on this Freestyle Friday. And that is Monday we are off. Jennifer and I are taking off. My mother-in-law, Jennifer's mom's coming down, and we're going to spend the day with her and her stepdad. We're going to Epcot on Sunday, and then Monday we're gonna tour around here. So there will be no show at all on Monday, but Jamie will be back on Tuesday. The whole gang will be here, so we'll be back hearing all about her trip to Spain and Portugal, I am sure. And if we all know Jamie, and we do, don't we, Frankie, that there will be stories.
Yeah. Great stories. Great stories.
She can't go anywhere without stories. Well, Callie has called in. Let's check in with her right away because I know she has limited time. This is our adopted bug, jockey in training, working for Todd Fletcher up there in New York right now. Hello, Callie.
Hey, Glenn. Hey, Frankie. How's it going?
Great, Callie. Nice to hear you.
Nice to hear you, Callie, too.
This means you didn't fall off this morning. You did good?
Yeah, I stayed on. I managed to stay on this so far this morning.
Well, how's it going up there in New York? How are you liking it?
Well, I am here up here in Saratoga Springs, New York, and I am absolutely loving it. I love it here.
How long have you been up there, Callie?
I got up here, I think, April 30th, so like, you know, first week of May.
Yeah. It's such a beautiful town, and I've spent many seasons up there racing and well there for the racing meet, and I still have some dear friends that live there year-round, and you probably see every day on the track, as a matter of fact, but great stuff.
I had to go back to Kentucky in Lexington for the graduation race, and I was talking to Chris McCarron. His biggest regret is that he didn't stay in Saratoga for a full season. We had to fly to Del Mar and back to ride horses, but he regrets that he didn't get to hang out and experience the Saratoga lifestyle, because it's a cool city. It's just got a ton of history, you know. It's the first track in America. It's, like I said, history. It's gorgeous up here. Just all kinds of good stuff going on.
Absolutely. I mean, what a town. I mean, the town itself, it's during the race meet or during the summer, there's so many things. There's a performing arts center besides the racing. There's beautiful golf courses. It's a resort town. Glenn, have you ever been to Saratoga?
No, I've never been there. Always wanted to go.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Those mornings
What is it like up there? Tell us about your schedule, Kelly. What do you do every morning?
Well, my schedule is pretty much the same as it was in Saratoga. I get to the barn around 5:00, and we start our sets, and we're on the Oklahoma train track. We're not actually on the actual Saratoga race course. It's over on the other side of the street. But we get two breaks. We get one at 7 and one at 9 for the tractors to go through. And when I first got here, there were like three of us riders for Pletcher, and I was getting on about 12 a day. But now we're getting into routine. We have more riders. So I'm only getting about 8, maybe 9 a day.
That's all.
That's all.
Yeah.
It's good to be young, Glenn.
Yeah, I was going to say, most people get on one or two a day and we can't walk the next day. Here's Callie. Oh, 8 or 9 a day, no big deal. What the heck? I go dancing after.
Pretty much.
So what's it like this week with Belmont and, you know, up that way?
You know, here a couple people are, you know, from Saratoga, a couple of my friends are headed over there, but it's not, as far as, like, it goes with my surroundings, it's not the biggest deal, not making a huge deal out of it. I mean, yeah, it's a huge deal that we might have another Triple Crown winner, and there's a lot of talk about that, but other than that, it's just another race.
Do you get to go
cool.
over and watch? Do you get to go over and watch or not?
A couple of my friends are, but I won't be. Nope. I won't
Bummer.
Be headed there. I'll be watching on TV.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a good spot. That's a good seat. That's actually a good seat.
Yeah, that's right.
My couch is the best seat. A lot of people always ask me, you know, because we're in the business and Cali's, you know, we're in the business that'll say, like with the Derby, every year they say, are you going to go to the Derby this year? And it'd be like, no, I really rather watch it from my couch. It's just when you're in the business, you know, you actually see more when you're sitting on the couch.
Exactly. Yeah, you get to. Exactly.
I love
what you mean.
Yeah, the stories and the close-up shots and the coverage is just, you know, it really brings you right there with the people you know and work with all the time. It's pretty cool.
And, you know, it's nice coverage for the rest of the world, Plash Nation, to see, you know, our industry and, you know, the great stories that we come up with.
Yeah. That
so,
we can
Callie,
share with
the
Glenn.
Ultimate goal here is to be a jockey. How you know, what's the next step? How, you know, at what point do you maybe get the chance to ride a race at some point?
Well, right now I'm just really focusing on just solely my riding. There's a lot I need to work on as far as my quad goes and my position, and I just need, you know, experience, hours in the saddle, dealing with different horses and different situations I come up with, like, you know, I could be doing a better job with more preparation. You know, like probably a couple days ago, we had a breeze day and I was at the quarter pole and all of a sudden one stirrup goes and then the other stirrup goes. And, you know, you need to get into those kind of situations to learn what you're going to do about it and what you can do about it in the future. So,
right.
Like I said, just I need to get used to a lot of, because, you know, I come from the show world, and that's a completely different world than the race world. And different situations, different horses. It's just a lot of hours needed on my part, experience-wise.
Yeah, Glenn, just to, you know, give you a little more to add to that is that as an apprentice rider or as starting out before you even get your apprentice license, I mean, spending hours and hours in the saddle, it's reining techniques, it's balance. It's also, you need to, in order to build up clientele for people who want to ride you in races, you're going to have to be good on the horses in the morning, and trainers will give you instructions, and you're going to have to handle your horses and your times and how you pace your workouts, all these things. You need to build up a strong foundation. That'll be selling tools that'll help you to get mounts for the races. So that's what Callie's doing a lot of right now.
Absolutely. You know, I know there's trainers, obviously, that are littered across the track. And, you know, a lot of people don't think about it, but they're all watching you. And everybody knows everybody kind of world. So you have to
you gotta
go out strong.
That's where you're selling yourself. You know, people are watching you ride, see how you're doing and how you're handling situations. And if you can impress them, that plants the seed that, hey, this girl can ride. And that's where you get your opportunities to start thinking about for racing.
Absolutely.
So. Well, Callie, I know we didn't have a lot of time with you this morning. You got to get back to work. I don't want to get you fired here on this Friday. So thank you so much.
We can't have that.
No, I know. Because I know what would happen. You'd come down here and you'd say, I need a room. And you'd be living with us.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Exactly.
I want Callie for jockey camp. I want Callie to come to jockey camp.
I think she'd be great at jockey camp. We'll have to
yeah.
Hear about that.
Julie Crone's coming.
Well, Callie, thank you so much, and good luck the rest of the day. Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you guys. You guys have a good one.
Thank you, Callie. Right,
bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
It's so funny. We met Callie because she had her horse, her pleasure horse, at our barn. And that's where we met her, and we've just we kind of fell in love with her, and I've been keeping track of her ever since. And she's just a sweetheart, and I hope that one of these days soon she can become a big-time jockey that she'll be riding in the Triple Crown on the winning horse.
Yeah, that's so cool that you guys embraced her and give her this time on the show to kind of share her story and bring some light to this stage of the career of a jockey. And she's great on the radio. She's a great personality. That's a neat story.
You know, it isn't easy either, is it, being a jockey? It's just not an easy thing to do.
Oh, gosh. I don't recommend it for anyone. And, you know, I offer a lot of these training tools and events and things throughout the Jockey World website. And it's never to encourage them. It's to educate them and try to give them an insight. Hey, are you sure you really want to do this? There's a lot of bumps in the road, and it takes a lot of, I say one of the strongest attributes to be a jockey is to have resilience, only because it's just going to crinkle you up, it's going to squeeze you, it's going to put you in positions and emotionally and physically that you really need to realize it's, people look at it, boy, is it fun? You know, sometimes it really can be a lot of fun, but to get to that point, There's a lot of pain.
Yeah. And I want to remind everybody that Frankie does a radio show here on Blog Talk Radio called Jockey World Radio. Cool logo, by the way, Frankie. I love the logo. And you can find it at jockeyworld.net is where you can find more information about Jockey World Radio. It's every Sunday at 4, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. And our show is a little different than most radio shows that cover horse racing. Ours is more about the horseman's side of it, and we have great guests from Hall of Fame jockeys and trainers to personalities, great stories. It's really educational for people that want to learn more about horse racing. So thank you, Glenn. We also have jockeyworldradio.com as a direct link in case you know. But that goes right to the Jockey World Radio page on the Jockey World website. Lots of goodies.
All right. Terrific. Well, and Frankie, let's talk about tomorrow a little bit, the Belmont. Of course, everybody knows that I picked I'll Have Another and I've been with I'll Have Another ever since. I've got lucky this year, Frankie. so tell me, you know, what do you think about tomorrow?
Well, without sizing the race up scientifically, you know, I think all of us are with another. Everybody's just really excited about the opportunity of bringing racing to light to the public. It's exciting. People that never watched a horse race will be watching this race. And this horse, I'll Have Another, is a great story behind him, great story behind the horse, the rider, the owner, the trainer, all good stuff. And, you know, regardless of breaking this race down to seeing, well, who could beat him, I mean, it's not an easy race. He's going to have to put a just as big an effort in that he won the Derby and the Preakness with to pull this one off. But it looks good. It looks good for him. If he shows up, we may have the first Triple Crown winner in 34 years, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's got some competition, as you said. He's got Dullahan in there, who I think actually, I'm guessing that Dullahan is going to be the one that he's chasing around that final turn. And then Union Rags in there as well. I'm not as confident and haven't been as hot in Union Rags as a lot of people have been over the time. I just don't think he's really shown it. If Union Rags, you know, it appears to me from what I've seen from his past races, if he gets bumped, if he has anything that, you know, goes wrong during the race, he tends to shut down a bit. And are there horses like that? Are the ones that just, unless they have a clean race, they're screwed? You know, they just get flustered.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'll give you a great example. A horse named Slew of Gold, who was Horse of the Year, one of the best horses in history, Son of Seattle Slew. I actually rode him as a 2-year-old, and I got to ride him in a second start where he won. His next start was in a stakes race where he was down inside, and he did not get the first turn. Was not good to him, but he was a horse that totally, with any sort of traffic or any sort of pressure or bumping, dirt in his face, totally affect him. And, I mean, a bad horse could beat him if you gave him a trip that he had to try to overcome those circumstances. So there, many horses are like that, great horses, as a matter of fact. With Union Rags, though, the only twist on like, his trip in the Derby was he's just got run over. He's just a bad trip, and
yeah.
Horse will not shine. Same kind of thing in the Florida Derby, just a lot of traffic to overcome, a lot of dirt in his face. But you go to a mile and a half, and a horse like this has a lot of time to overcome some of these things, and the race kind of filters out. If there's more time, things kind of give a horse that has ability that can overcome more things because they have more time to overcome them, and the ability's there. So he could make the race very interesting, Union Rags, in my opinion.
And, of course, you know, one of the things we always talk about is post position. But in a race that's longer like this, it's not quite as important, is it?
Yes. When a race is this long, horses that tend to not show speed, because the fractions will be softer and generally, horses that – In a race that's a mile and an eighth, for example, might be typically back in the pack. They could be closer up and towards the front. It all depends on what the instructions are and what the horses and there's so many variables. When a race is a mile and a half, so many things can set up so differently than they would in the Preakness or the Kentucky Derby.
I said that because I'll Have Another is in the 11th spot. Now, there's only 12 horses, so it's not like you're in the 19th or 20th, like in the Kentucky Derby, where you're way outside, you know?
Yeah.
Less horses, it's less of a problem, too.
Well, yeah, definitely less traffic to deal with. But in a post position like post 11 for I'll Have Another, that's actually a sweet spot to be in because he can break, file in, and stalk on the outside where he's clear and free from traffic, if he chooses, where the jockey will place him. It's not a disadvantage by any means. The worst case scenario is that the horses don't filter out and they just go completely straight across the track, head to head, and he's in the 11 hole all the way around the first turn. That's not going to happen. They'll sort out and he'll be able to fall in. Save some ground.
What do you think about his jockey?
I think it's really a neat story. The more I see him and learn about him, the more I like him. And it, you know, it's another example where there's so many great jockeys out there, and the story behind this guy, he's just as credible as the next, but a kind of a no-name underdog. But he was the leading jockey up there in Vancouver for the last few years. I mean, he's definitely shown he's got lots of ability and can win. Because they closed down there for the winter, he takes a chance and goes to Santa Anita, and while he's waiting for the meet to open back up in Canada, and bam, he gets lucky like this. It's really a great story to show that there's so many great jockeys out there, and he's handled all this pressure so brilliantly and gracefully, and it's just great for the game.
And we're talking about Mario Gutierrez, of course.
Yes.
You know, the jockey for I'll Have Another. And I noticed he got some help from somebody that you've been on the radio with here recently on my show and your show. The Mig, Miglieri, was up there giving him some pointers.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, there's a lot of press and a lot of emphasis because there hasn't been a Triple Crown winner in so many years, since Affirmed in 78, I think it was. And there has been a couple of very close calls. And because the Belmont sets up so differently than other racetracks, and Glenn, I don't know if you noticed, but the Belmont is a mile and a half around.
Right.
The Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs, that's only a one-mile racetrack. The Preakness at Pimlico is only a one-mile racetrack. The Belmont is a mile and a half racetrack. And it's one time around the track from the finish line back to the finish line. And there's been some Belmonts that the jockeys have pulled the trigger a little too soon. If you imagine going down the backside as a jockey, you're heading into the second turn. This is when all the jockeys are preparing to start to make their move. But in the case of the Belmont, you still have so much more time.
It's
a big track, and so you want to be a little more patient and reserved, and not just think that you're heading into the second and last turn, that you only have a certain amount to go to the finish line when you actually have a much further distance to go. And Richie and I both spent a lot of time riding on the Belmont racetrack. So, Richie's going to make sure that Mario is well prepared on knowing where he's at and that he doesn't get lost in that amazing size racetrack. They call the Big Sandy.
Is that what they call it, the Big Sandy?
Yeah, it's a nickname. That's something from the 30s, I guess.
Well, you know, I can see what you're saying, too, because you get to, you know, even a jockey gets habits. You develop habits whether you want to or not. Anything you do in life, you develop habits. Like I say, all right, too much on the show. But we're coming around that final turn. It's a habit. You're just preparing. You know you're going to have to get a move on. If you're going to get it done, it's got to be done, you know, starting around. And it must be so difficult and a great amount of self-discipline to think that through in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, and with all this pressure, I mean, you know, as a jockey, it's, and it goes back to, like, people perceive it, that's got to be a lot of fun. But you can't imagine the pressure you have. And then you're thinking about your horse. You're thinking about the horses around you. You're trying to know where you're at with how the pace is setting up, how the other jockeys, where they're at. You know, as a jockey, and if you're behind horses, you're watching the jockeys in front of you. You're watching every move they make. And it's not only like changing paths. It's actually seeing how much horse they have left. And the way you can do that is seeing how if they're starting to ride with their arms, if they're tapping their horse on the shoulder with the whip, is there all signals that they're starting to run out of gas. And you try to plan your trip to not get pinned behind horses that'll be slowing down in front of you. So there are all these elements. There's millions of them. A lot goes to it.
And I was going to say, and Mario will be remembered as the one who lost the Triple Crown, not that the one who won the first two races. If he loses, that's just human nature.
It's just human nature and any sport. But jockeys, unfortunately, when horses win, they get praised. And when they lose, they get ridiculed. And jockeys, it's generally lose 90% of the time. It's horse racing. It's a tough game to try to win all the time. And with this emphasis, all this pressure, all eyes will be on Mario.
And, you know, Mike Smith is a perfect example of that. Look at that, such an accomplished jockey. And look, he's still beating himself up over the Zenyatta thing. I mean, just the whole thing. Well, let's take a break here for Kentucky Performance Products. And then we have a tremendous story that we want to tell you about. Her name is Madison. And this is a racehorse story today, a racehorse called Mad for Smarty. We're going to talk to her about her amazing story here in just a minute. But first, Kentucky Performance Products sponsors this show. When horsemen are asked why they were looking for what they were looking for in a nutritional supplement for their horses, the answer is easy, one that is affordable, effective, and scientifically proven. Kentucky Performance Products took that message to heart and developed supplements that meet those needs. As you're putting your horses into more work this summer, you will be putting more and more stress on their joints. A product that can help is Joint Armor from KPP. It provides your horse with the building blocks necessary to maintain healthy joints throughout his lifetime. Joint Armor helps maintain fluid motion and flexibility in your horse's joints. It also supports normal cartilage development and reduces joint deterioration. To learn more about Joint Armor for Kentucky Performance Products and all of their terrific products, you can visit them at Kentucky Performance Products, and their website is kppusa.com. You can also follow them on Facebook. They have a terrific Facebook page. She's always posting nutritional information up there, things about hay and grass and just anything you want to know about what your horse eats and what goes into his body and what he needs. You'll find on their Facebook page. Just search for Kentucky Performance Products. So that's kppusa.com. Good company, excellent lady who runs it by the name of Karen, and I know you know her, Frankie. So, we like working with them, and we appreciate their support over this whole time. They've been with us since the beginning of the Horse Radio Network. So I can't say enough. Check out kppusa.com. And now to an amazing story of an amazing teenager who has a blog, and it's called madforsmarty.blogspot.com. Jennifer came across this story, and I'm so glad she did. And she called up Madison and said, you got to come on our show and tell your story because it's heartwarming, it's fun, and let's hear it. Good morning, Madison.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this morning.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Madison. Great story, and I just want to say hello. This is Frankie Lovato, but great to have you on.
Thanks. I'm a big fan of the Equisizer, so it's great to talk to you.
Awesome.
Well, there you go.
All right, let's just talk about me now.
Hey, Madison, do you have a love-hate relationship with the Equisizer like everybody else?
Oh, it's pure love right now. I've just tried it a couple times, and it's awesome.
Awesome.
Now, Madison, we haven't told anything about your story, so why don't you start from when you were 10 years old? How did this story begin?
All right, so I was 10 years old, never seen a horse race in my life, and this was the time when Smarty Jones was running for the Triple Crown, almost exactly 8 years ago. And my dad, he's not a fan of horse racing, but he understood the importance of the Triple Crown, and he called me in to watch Smarty's Belmont, which is the first race I'd ever seen on TV. And I just fell in love from that point. He lost the race, of course, but I was just head over heels in love for Smarty Jones and his story and his connections, all of that. It was fantastic to me. So I began writing fan mail to Three Chimneys Farm, where he stood as a stallion until just recently. And I was 10. I was drawing pictures, writing songs, all sorts of things that a 10-year-old would send to a horse.
You were a groupie.
Yes, I was a groupie, hardcore Smarty.
I love it. That's great.
And the people at Three Chimneys were so wonderful that they would respond to my emails and my letters and pictures. And they really helped me develop this passion for the racing industry by being so responsive to me as a little kid and listening to what I had to say and always being great and responding to my fan mail. So this continued. The horse phase never really stopped. My dad had no idea what he was getting himself into when he asked me to watch the race. And Smarty Jones's foal started racing when I was 13. And at that time, I'd learned much more about the industry, had a more complete knowledge of it, rather than just a little kid drawing pictures of horses. And I was following Smarty Jones's foals that were racing across the country and the globe and sending updates to Three Chimneys, entries, workouts, results, anything I could find, hunting him all through chimneys. And so that was when my passion really took off. And I started learning so much just by following these horses. He had about 80 in his first crop, so there were a lot of them to keep up with. But so sending updates to Three Chimneys, and eventually I got in touch with Mrs. Chapman, Smarty Jones's owner, through Three Chimneys. And her and I started communicating back and forth. Same thing, I was sending her updates and emails about Smarty Jones's foals running all over the place. And eventually, Three Chimneys and Mrs. Chapman, they were impressed by the knowledge that I had. I was 14 this next spring, and they invited me to come up to Kentucky for the week with my mom, spend some time meeting the people at Three Chimneys, Patricia Chapman, Smarty Jones. I spent an awesome time running around the bluegrass with the greatest people in the industry, learning so much. It was incredible.
Oh, my gosh. The ride up there, your mother must have been horrible for your mother. You were probably bouncing all around the inside of the car on the way there.
Yes, I definitely was. And when we actually got there, I mean, you know how horse people are. We were talking at 100 miles an hour about racing and breeding, and she just had no idea what we were talking about. And I think that's when my family really started to understand how involved I was in racing and how unique it was that I followed all these horses. The amount of time I spent with Smarty Jones's foals.
Wow. And now, so you went there, you spent the week, you got to see the beautiful bluegrass. By the way, I just want to throw in a shout out here to Three Chimneys Farm. There are very few farms, and this isn't a negative, they just don't have the time, that spend the time and take the time, that would have taken the time for you. You hit one of the classiest run operations there is in this country, in this world, and that is the reason that this all happened, is because they are some classy people who really care about their fans over there.
Oh, I completely agree. Three Chimneys has been so incredible to me. For the last 8 years of my life, just every single step of the way, they've been awesome and really changed the direction my life will be taking because of how responsive they were to me as a fan. It's awesome. I love them. They're great.
All right, then what happened? There was a foal that came along, right?
Right. So while my mom and I were in Kentucky, this is back in the summer of 2009, Robert Clay, the owner of Three Chimneys, mentioned that he had a 2-year-old Smarty Jones colt that needed to be named. And he wanted to name the horse after me and also kind of to remember Smarty's many fans. And my mom actually came up with the name Mad for Smarty, so Mad for Madison. And then you also have Mad for Smarty, you know, all of Smarty's fans who were crazy over him. So that's
terrific
so,
name.
I think so too. I was happy with it, and so was Mr. Clay. And the name went through before we had even left Kentucky to head back to Texas. And so I left with the Smarty Jones named after me. It was awesome.
That's great.
And then what happened? Did this horse race?
Yes, he raced 19 times. He had a little nice little career. He won over $100,000, which is a good amount. I follow all of Smarty's foals still to this day, but I followed, you know, I kept a special eye on this one.
I'm sure.
And, yeah. So,
why again? I'm kidding.
She watched every race 20 times is what she really means.
yeah, you know, maybe so. But so he had his career. It was awesome. I followed his races. And then back in September of 2011, he was retired from racing. And in December of 2011, my mom got a call from Three Chimneys, from Jen Reutz, the marketing and communications director there, saying that this horse had been retired and they would like to give him to me as a riding horse. And you can imagine my reaction to that. It was incredible. So, yeah, it was, oh my gosh, it was just the coolest thing. And you could never imagine. I mean, so Three Chimneys gave me this awesome horse, a Smarty Jones gelding at this point, who had been named after me out of one of their best mares. And in January of this year, he came down to Texas, and he's been living with me ever since.
Wow. That is awesome. Such a great story.
It is an amazing story.
So.
Now, and you have a blog. It's called Mad for Smarty, and I was reading on there. It looks like you've progressed. How many months ago did he get there?
He got here in January of this year, so
okay.
6 months ago, and I've been riding him for about the past 2 months.
I know, and you're doing great with him, apparently.
It's going well so far. I'm thrilled with his progress. He's been great.
Now, is he level-headed? Is he, you know, is he fruity or level-headed, or what kind of personality does he have?
He's definitely level-headed. He's debunking all the myths of crazy ex-racehorses at the barn. He's an easygoing guy. He can be a little bit too lazy and stubborn when he doesn't want to do things, but he's all around, he's been great so far.
And now, are you planning on showing him, or are you just going to have fun with him? Were you a shower before? You know, just trying to figure out what kind of riding you're going to do with him.
I show just a little bit. I'm a hunter jumper. So my goal is to do a show with him, maybe just on the flat by the end of the summer, at which point I'll be going off to college. But, yeah, that's hunter jumper is hopefully the career path that he'll go down.
I think he should be an eventer. I'm looking at his picture here, and I'm voting for eventing, although your mom might not want to watch that.
I would love to learn 3-day eventing at some point. That'd be incredible. But right now we're just working on flat work mostly. We haven't started jumping much yet.
I got to ask you, now you said your life was changed by them. Is there a career in the racing field somewhere for you down the pike after college, or what's going to be your major?
Oh, yes. I'm going to have an equine management major and hopefully a marketing double major with that. So my dream career would be doing marketing for one of the big stud farms in the Bluegrass in Lexington, ideally Three Chimneys, of course. but something on the business end of the breeding industry would be ideal.
Frankie, I don't know about you, and you've dealt with people over at Three Chimneys. You know how great they are. I think that they're probably going to be keeping an eye for her graduation date, don't you?
I think so. And, you know, you mentioned Three Chimneys. They actually, the girl that is my assistant producer for Jockey World Radio was hired as an intern for their marketing media department there at Three Chimneys. So, I mean, they really do. Like you mentioned, Glenn, I mean, it's not a put down on any of the other bigger operations, but Three Chimneys really takes the time to reach out to the fans and give tours and social media. They really do a fantastic job, that spectrum of the business. And it's great for our industry. And that's an awesome story, Madison. You should be very, very proud of yourself as well. So good stuff.
Okay, Madison, we can't let you get off the phone without asking then. You're more educated in racing than either Frankie or I at this point. So who's your pick for tomorrow?
I'll have another would be fantastic. And, of course, you know, we're just talking about Three Chimneys. They stand his I'll Have Another Stallion Flower Alley. So I was over the moon for them when the horse won the Derby. And if he won the Triple Crown, that would just be so incredible. But I'm hopefully optimistic about his chances tomorrow. That's all the weight I'll put in it. Anything can happen. So.
We were talking about Flower Alley here last week on the show and how Flower Alley actually stands at $7,500 and how we think that's probably going to go up next year. You think so, Madison?
I think so. I could see it doubling, definitely.
Yeah, at least, right?
Yeah.
Right.
That boy just got more valuable right there.
Yes.
And I know I read that he has doubled his bookings since the Kentucky Derby, too. All of a sudden, his Flower Alley was one that let people went, who? And now they're not saying who anymore.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm so, so happy for Three Chimneys that they had this horse. And it's great. The highs and lows of the industry are amazing. So you had Dinah Former, one of the most prolific stallions in the country, die just a week or two before the Derby when Flower Alley's son steps right up and takes the race.
Gee, she knows racing, Frankie.
She does. I love it. You know, when Dinah Former, that was really something you mentioned, Madison, that the devastation to the farm, the personnel, they were tears. I mean, you thought you would think that it was an actual family member, how much Dinah Former meant to Three Chimneys. That's how important this farm, this operation is just, you know, it's so heartfelt. And Dinah Former, wow, I got to ride some, and some of the best horses I rode were by Dinah Former. And, yeah, he was sadly gone. But here this horse steps up by Flower Alley to win the Derby. And that just Three Chimneys, it was just – we talked about karma, right, Glenn?
Yep.
you know, they do the right thing, and here they're giving this great gift of a horse that's heading possibly, well, already winning the Derby and Preakness, takes nothing away. Even if he doesn't win the Belmont, he's brought a lot of life to the game and to Three Chimneys.
And now, Madison, Three Chimneys also is actively, you know, works very hard at making sure that all the horses they produce end up getting second careers after racing, don't they?
Right, right, which is just so incredible and so fantastic. They're so open about their policy. If a horse that's been connected to Three Chimneys at any point in its career is in jeopardy, they'll take care of that horse. And Mad for Smarty is a great example of how far they'll go. You know, he needed a home. They're like, all right, you know, that's that. They're going to take care of their horses.
Well, that's terrific, Madison. Congratulations to you. I know that if I'll have another wins tomorrow, we will hear screaming all the way from Texas.
I believe it. I wouldn't. It would be so incredible. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Well, congratulations and good luck. Keep us informed. Do you have Jennifer's information? Keep us informed about how Mad for Smarty is doing and how your progress is going. If anybody wants to follow that too, they can go to madforsmarty.blogspot.com. You can see the pictures there and everything. We'll post the picture on our Facebook page and a link to it as well. But good luck. What college are you going to, real quick?
The University of Kentucky.
Really? You're going to UK?
Yep. Right there in Lexington,
Well, congratulations. That's terrific. Have fun there,
Thank
Madison.
You.
Good luck.
Oh, I will.
Yes, thank great luck, much. Madison.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
A sweet young girl.
Yeah.
And, God, she made me feel stupid because she knows more about racing than you and I know at this point.
How do you think I feel? You know, that's actually a great point, Glenn. Most of my kids on Jockey World, we have memberships, I call them my kids, my kiddies. All these kids are just a lot like the same mold that Madison is out of, just have this love and passion in horse racing. And I'll give a shout-out to Kayla. Kayla Jarvinen is one of my stars. I met her when she was 13, just has a dying passion for horse racing. She does my weekly news on Jockey World Radio. But whenever I need to know something, I say, Kayla, she'll send me notes, she'll bullet points. I wish I had contacted her before I came on the show today, so I'd have been a little smarter for the Belmont Stakes. But
that's okay. We had Madison. It doesn't matter.
We had Madison. It's incredible. I love it. I love that stuff.
I know, Madison, if you're still listening and you haven't heard of Jockey World Radio, just Google search that, it'll pop up there at the top, and he puts out a show every week. You can listen to the past ones, but I think you would enjoy that. It's a fantastic show. If you're a horse junkie and a jockey junkie, that show is going to be something that you would definitely be interested in. Take a listen to that. Well, Frankie, we're going to take a little break here for a song. Now, I have something to say here to Aubrey, who I know is listening. She writes on our Facebook page, Glenn, no offense, but I miss Jamie too. No offense taken. If for nothing other than her ability to control your song choices, I keep having to hang up the phone during the daily song. I guess Jamie and I have the same taste in music. Well, don't hang up, Aubrey, because if you do, you will offend a certain Frankie Lovato, because Frankie also is a musician and put a very special song together about a very special horse named Seabiscuit. And I put a little package together here, Frankie, and you're going to see what it is here in a minute, but here is the race between Seabiscuit and War Admiral, followed up by A Legend in the Game by Frankie Lovato.
Just below us, we've noted in the 10-box square that opens onto the track, the winner's circle, tall, sparkling silver trophy for the winner this afternoon.
And they're off, and this is a go. And Georgie Wolf is at the whip on Seabiscuit to keep him up. And they're coming to me head and head. War Admiral on the inside. Wolf is driving Seabiscuit, and Seabiscuit is outrunning him. Seabiscuit is coming to me. One length, two lengths in the lead. And he came right over two lengths. He goes by me. Seabiscuit by two lengths. War Admiral right on his heels. Kutzinger sitting still and biding his time. And it's Seabiscuit by a length and a half down the backstretch. They're halfway down that backstretch, and there goes War Admiral after him. Now the horse race is on, and I'm losing them there. They're head and head, but I'll catch them here in just another 50 yards. They're head and head, and now War Admiral has a head advantage, and Seabiscuit's got a head advantage. They're going into that far turn, head and head, and it is either one. Take your choice. And right there, they're coming into view now. And the head and head Seabiscuit on the inside. By a neck with War Admiral second. That big throng dashing across the track, across the infield there, coming for this fence. They've come into the stretch here in just a second. And they're head and head as they head for that home lane. Watch for them now as they turn into the stretch. Head and head, both horses under a drive. This is a real horse race, just what we hope we get. They're head and head, and both jockeys driving. It's the best horse from here in. They've got 200 yards to come. It's horse against horse. Both of them driving. Seabiscuit leads by a length. Now Seabiscuit by a length and a half. Wolf has put away his whip. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit by three. Seabiscuit is the winner by four lengths. And you never saw such a wild crowd. Seabiscuit the winner by four lengths. Trying to drown this crowd out here. They're roaring around me. Seabiscuit was the winner from end to end by four lengths.
Big screen, not a ball player from any big team. Was not a hero that fought in war. Not the kind of hero who's ever known before. The hero was the hero. They come from coast to coast with cheers. For this old horse would earn his fame. This is the story. This is the story to this man.
Well, that was my co-host, Frankie Lovato, a legend in the game. Well, Frankie, Seabiscuit, boy, wouldn't you love to see somehow over the next year or two a match race develop with two horses again to bring that kind of excitement like the whole world had for that race?
Well, you know, first I want to say, Glenn, that I think you officially played that song more than my own mother, so I thank you for that. But, you know, to answer that question, yeah, I mean, you know, match racing, when you're in the business, match racing is kind of a scary thing. You just feel like you're really, really pushing it, you know, with two great horses. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think that would be very exciting for the public. But us in the business, you know, it's kind of like, oh, maybe that's not such a good idea. But, you know, yeah, I mean, another Seabiscuit, you know, but I'll have another, you know, this horse going for the Triple Crown tomorrow. He's kind of a little bit of a Seabiscuit story. And it's exciting stuff.
Well, by the way, you're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with my co-host today, filling in for Jamie, Frankie Lovato, and Jennifer. Coach Jen is over there in the producer chair as well. And this show is sponsored by Kentucky Performance Products. You can find all of their great products at kppusa.com. I agree with you there. And Seabiscuit, of course, yeah, I don't know about you, but I still get goosebumps when I listen to that race, when I think about the movie, when I hear your song. I just get goosebumps with the whole Seabiscuit story. And hopefully I'll have another. It was interesting. We had Mike from Horse Racing Radio Network, HRRN, on last Friday. By the way, he's a terrific guest. He's just, you know, he's a great guest because he knows his stuff inside and out. And, you know, he said an interesting thing. I said, well, you know, if I'll have another wins, you know, what do you think the future is for I'll Have Another, and what would you like the future to be? And, you know, he said, I'd like to see him keep racing. I'd like to see, instead of him being retired immediately to stud, he said, I think for racing, it would be better if he kept racing and became sort of that next Zenyatta story.
Well, you can't argue that for the public. It's, you know, we love to have a hero and root for someone that we're familiar with, that's somebody we can really get behind and sink our teeth into with our emotions, with the business, and watch them race, you know. But, you know, on the other hand, there's concern of what's best for the horse and what's best for the business end of it, of course, falls into it. But as far as what's best for the horse, sometimes that really is the deciding factor. Is it worth taking a chance of pushing a horse maybe further that could get an injury, that could be even catastrophic, you know? I don't know. It's a tough one. It's a tough one, Glenn. I mean, it's like your children, you know? You want them to go out there and do things, but you're still nervous. When they get their driver's license, you know, you're still, like, you're concerned. You know, there's that feeling, and sometimes it's a gut feeling. And sometimes it's being just careful, and so that's something that I can see both sides, from the public or from the connections that own and have the horse, you know?
Well, there's another thing that we're all concerned about, too, and especially jockeys, and that's safety, because jockeys are getting hurt all the time. And, you know, one of the things that we always talk about and always preach here on the show is wearing a helmet. I don't care if you ride English or Western or backwards or frontwards or 12 to a horse. You know, when we're driving, we wear helmets, too. You know, there's just that safety factor. And one of the people that has been instrumental in getting the awareness of helmets out there is Lindsay of Riders for Helmets. She founded Riders for Helmets. She's also a good friend of ours. And tomorrow is, I think, Lindsay, isn't it the third International Helmet Awareness Day?
It is, Glenn, yep. Quite proud that we've reached number three.
I remember number one and you going, oh, God, this is a lot of work. I'm never doing this.
I remember number one, and Frankie was with us at the Kentucky Horse Park. And
yes,
he brought along his wonderful horses, and everybody had great time riding them.
Yes, hi, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yep. Sandy and I were there for the first annual Helmet Awareness Day, and very, very proudly, I must say. So that's a great thing. I got to tell you,
Lindsay, Frankie still wears a helmet when he's riding popcorn.
I'm wearing a helmet while I'm talking to you on the phone right now, Glenn.
You just never know when an accident might happen.
You never know. You know what? I want to take up any time, but there's a great story about a helmet with a Triple Crown event many years ago. A jockey named Jack Canal in Maryland. They train at different racetracks that are within 45 minutes of each other. Sometimes a jockey might do a workout at, like, let's say, Pimlico, and then drive over to Laurel and do another workout. Well, this jockey, Jack Canal, who was riding a Loma's Ruler, scheduled to ride a Loma's Ruler for the Preakness, he was driving back from one track to another for a workout. He had his helmet on in his car. It gets into a car accident. His head goes through the windshield.
Oh.
Not a scratch on him.
Wow.
And goes on to win the Preakness the next day.
Wow.
That's crazy. Wow.
So, yeah, it makes you think. I mean, I know you can't walk around your home with a helmet on, but, you know, you never know. But,
wow,
gosh.
Amazing. I never heard that story.
Yeah, it's really a great story. And Lindsay, I'm being rude here, but Lindsay.
No,
you're
not. You're the co-host. You're supposed to talk.
Ever since, you know, hooking up with you and this whole thing, how this all got started with Riders for Helmets, I mean, I really, really, I'm never lazy anymore. If my helmet's on the other side of the barn and I'm getting on a horse, and the same goes for Sandy. You know, before we would jump on with our baseball caps or cowboy hats or whatever, but you know what? It's just not worth it anymore. It's just like buckling your seatbelt. You start doing it, and you can't ride without one now.
That's fantastic. That's great to hear.
Yeah. Thanks to you. Your effort.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, Lindsay, tell us about tomorrow. What's going on?
Well, just before I tell you about tomorrow, just really quickly, I would like to make a couple of acknowledgements, if that's okay.
Yeah.
We had actually dedicated this year's, the third International Helmet Awareness Day, to Courtney King-Dye when we first announced it, and quite rightly so, because if it wasn't for Courtney, this whole global movement in helmet wearing would not have happened, which was very unfortunate that it caused her accident, you know, took her accident to start that. But I think she's also very proud that she feels that her accident is not just been labeled a tragedy, but something good has come of it as well. But also, we wanted to dedicate this year's event to Dr. Craig Farrell, who was the U.S. equestrian team physician and chair of the FEI Medical Council. And he was also a very, very good friend and somebody that worked very closely with us on the Riders for Helmets campaign for 2 years. And he very sadly passed away after a riding accident last week. Mm-hmm. And we just want to, you know, acknowledge everything he did for the Riders for Helmets campaign. And we're going to continue, you know, to grow it globally even further in his honor. So I'm getting upset talking about it. But I did want to just make those two acknowledgements. And also to Chad Mandel, who works with me on the Riders for Helmets campaign as well, because he's kind of the invisible person of the campaign, but he does so, so much.
Very good. Yeah. And tomorrow, people, there's a couple facets to this tomorrow. You're starting something new, I saw, but let's first talk about discounts. Let's first talk about buying a helmet.
Basically, we have hundreds of retailers around the globe that will be participating in International Helmet Awareness Day tomorrow, and you can find your nearest participating retailer. We have a new great map at which you can search this year, and that web address is www.riders4helmets.com/IHAD for International Helmet Awareness Day. And if you visit that website, it will give you the list of all of the participating retailers globally that are offering discounts on helmets tomorrow. We have retailers in Australia, Canada, the USA, Ireland, Wales, England, you know, so it's fantastic that there's so many retailers participating. And the discounts basically vary, but I think we have 12 different participating helmet manufacturers this year, so that's awesome. And all of the retailers can be found on that site either by searching for them by name or just typing in your address, and it will bring up who is nearest to you.
Okay, great. And I noticed you have people posting on your Facebook already. I am buying 2 helmets tomorrow on discount for National Helmet Awareness Day.
Yeah,
I'm sure you're getting a lot of that.
Yes, we are. And we're also doing something new as well this year. We're actually going to be holding live webinars tomorrow. And you can register for them by visiting the main ridersforhelmets.com website, which is Riders Again with an S, the number 4, and Helmets with an S.com. And we have people like Lucinda Green, Courtney King Dye, Darren Cha-Cha, the folks from Point Two, Dr. Michael Whitlock, who's a head trauma expert from London, Tonya Johnston, lots of great people joining us. For the live webinars, and you do need to pre-register to participate in them, but they will be speaking live and answering everybody's questions. And if people can't actually join live, we will be posting the videos from the live webinars on the Riders for Helmets website shortly as well.
I think that's a terrific way to do it. You know, you tried to do it on a more local scale before, but now with technology and with Chad's help, I'm sure, shout out to Chad, you're able to put on these webinars that really anybody around the world can benefit from, and I think that's terrific.
Well, we actually thought about kind of making Frankie a little bit of a Santa and sending him on one of the horses instead of a reindeer to all the different countries to get everybody G'd up for Helmet Awareness Day. But unfortunately, I don't think his horses move quite as fast as, you know, the red-nosed reindeer, so I don't think that would work too well.
Well, thanks for thinking of me.
We seriously considered it.
I could probably fit in a Santa suit at this time of my life.
On popcorn. He could go on popcorn. It would only take you about 25 years to get around, Frankie. You'd be good.
Yeah, the visual.
Gage, Dr. Farrell, shout out. We're going to give you a shout out. Without your efforts here, and I realize, you know, Courtney King Dye's accident was the impetus for this, but you're the one that has really stepped up, taken the time, your own money, your own effort for the last 3 years to make this happen. I remember talking to you at the very beginning before there was a Riders for Helmets and all of that. And, you know, I said to you, are you willing to put in the time and commitment it's going to take to make this work? And you said, yes. I don't think you quite knew how much it was going to be. But, you know, you've stuck with it and you've saved lives, and that has to be very satisfying for you.
It is. I mean, it is incredibly satisfying, and the emails we get from people, you know, that are in the 50s, gone and bought the first helmet after reading, you know, articles on the website. And a lady just posted on the Facebook page last week that she went and bought her first helmet after watching Courtney King Dye's video on our YouTube channel. So, I mean, it is incredibly satisfying, but I don't want to detract from the people that have been so supportive of the campaign, because it wouldn't have happened without them either. And I actually remember the day Dr. Farrell first called me, and he said, are you Lindsay White? And I said, I might be. It depends who's calling. And he said, well, if I told you I was somebody that was interested in people getting people to wear helmets and encouraging them to wear helmets, would you be Lindsay White? And I said, oh, in that case, I am. And, you know, I always remember that first conversation with him. And he said, oh, I want to set up a kind of safety symposium. What do you think? And I said, well, what do you want me to do? And he said, oh, we'll basically organize it. And I said, oh, okay, you know, not knowing at all what that involved. But, you know, three symposiums later, that was just brilliant, what he founded as a extension of the Riders for Helmets with the safety symposiums. He just took it to a different level. And we're going to keep those symposiums going for sure. And then, like I say, Courtney and all that she's done, I mean, her video on YouTube's been viewed like 50,000 times. Chad just so much for the Riders for Helmets. He rebuilt the new Riders for Helmets website and the Helmet Awareness Day website. And, you know, he's kind of the behind the scenes guy that doesn't really say anything in public, but he should get so much credit as well.
And I know, Frankie, too, that, you know, I've talked to a couple of the retailers who participated in this day the last couple of years, and their sales for helmets were out of this world. I mean, you know, 100
yeah.
times normal. So it's
300% normal, actually.
Yes, actually, you're probably right about that. One of the things I want to say, and this is something that we don't say enough, Lindsay, is if you have a helmet that is over 4 to 5 years old, you need to replace it.
That helmet is
not safe. It's not safe anymore. Yeah. The foam in there biodegrades. Foam is not made to last forever. You know, your pillow, everything that's made out of foam wears out over time. UV rays cause it. Heat causes it. Cold causes it to disintegrate. And it really does become brittle and just falls apart. So when you crash your head into that jump, or when you crash your head into the sidewalk or under the macadam or the ground, it's not going to provide the kind of protection that you should have. So replace that helmet,
yeah.
You know, go out tomorrow, go to one of the retailers, find it on ridersforhelmets.com, and replace it. Take the time, take the effort, take a little bit of money, and get it replaced. You can buy a helmet now, a really good, sharp-looking, fun helmet for $40. There's no excuse anymore.
Yeah, no, I would also add to that, because you're absolutely right about the five-year maximum age limit for helmets since they've been purchased, but also people have, an accident, they have a fall, they don't think it's that bad, they don't think the helmet has any damage, and they have no comprehension that the helmet is designed to take the impact, and it's probably suffered pretty bad damage internally, even though you can't see it. I know when Oliver Townend fell off at Rolex three-day event a few years ago, his helmet looked perfectly fine, had like a minor scratch on the outside, and the lining of the helmet was crushed from 21 to 11 millimeters inside, basically where his head hit the telegraph pole. But on the outside, it looked perfectly fine. So you must replace your helmet if it takes a direct blow as well, because it will not do what it should. If you unfortunately have a second accident, it will not do what it should in protecting your head, because it's already done its purpose the first time around.
Imagine if he wasn't wearing a helmet, that 11 millimeters would have been his skull.
Exactly. And I would also encourage people to really check their helmet fit as well. Obviously, in the UK, it's a little bit of a different angle and approach to education on helmets than it is over here, because more people over there do tend to wear helmets. But I think Horse and Hound did a survey and found a staggering number of people were wearing helmets that don't actually fit them. And a helmet that doesn't fit is not going to protect your head properly. So it is really important to have a correctly fitting helmet as well.
Well, Frankie, I know how important helmets are to jockeys. Helmets save jockeys' lives every day, even the exercise riders, because, you guys are always falling off. There's always something happening when you're in that crowd of horses going at those speeds. And if it's good enough for jockeys, it's good, it should be good enough for you. And one of the things, I'm going to let you go after this, Lindsay, but one of the things that we have talked about in these symposiums, and it has always been a thing, is, when helmets become more fashionable, people will start to wear them. When they start to look good, when they become cool, they're starting to make some really cool-looking helmets now.
They are. And, again, I just actually posted something on the Riders for Helmets website early this morning, and it actually shows you, who's wearing which helmets, which is kind of cool. It's, some of the top riders and the different helmets that they wear. And there's just so many really great-looking helmets out there now, so I don't think the excuse can be that, helmets are ugly or they're not attractive. Helmets look really, really sharp these days, and, just pick something that you like, and obviously pick something that fits, but there's so many out there, there's bound to be something that you do like and you do want to wear.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Lindsay, for joining us again. It's riders4helmets.com. You'll find the information right on there. Join her for the webinars tomorrow, and go on one of the participating retailers and buy yourself a new helmet. What the heck? Buy five of them and have one for every day of the week.
And again, the website at which you can find the participating retailers is riders4helmets.com/IHAD for International Helmet Awareness Day. And thank you so much, Glenn and Frankie. It was great to catch up with you, Frankie.
Well, it's great hearing from you, Lindsay. And keep up the
great
work.
Hi, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Good luck tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Frankie, before we have to – go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to
– Just, I got to commend her again, the work that she's put into this and the drive, the energy, the commitment that she's put into Riders for Helmets and creating –
the money.
Yeah.
Her own. Yeah.
Is really, you know, she's a hero. She's my hero. She's a true hero. And she's saved lives. I mean, she's getting people to actually stop and think and put their dang helmet on. So, and like you said, the fashionable thing, Glenn, is unfortunately, a lot of the kids, it's not cool and whatever, but it's getting cooler. It's getting better. And it's what we need to do. One of your riders.
You know what's funny about that, though, Frankie, and I've never understood why this hasn't transitioned over. I think it's starting to now with the kids, is it's cool to wear a helmet when you're riding your bike, when you're skateboarding, when you're doing X Games stuff.
Yeah.
When you're skiing, skiers are into their helmets, but they're cool. I mean, they're cool looking, and they're fun, and they're just cool. So I think that they're coming to that now, and I think that that's helping, especially with the younger generation. that they're going to become that cool as they are in skiing and snowboarding.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Well, you know, the thing, I think the biggest hurdle is the Western discipline, because people love their cowboy hats, you know?
Yep.
And
yep.
It's, you know, that's going to be the toughest discipline. And unfortunately, they're probably the biggest discipline. So
that's true. And, you know, they had cowboy hat helmets when Jennifer and I had our tack shop way back when. But they looked like something out of a comic book. They were so big. They looked like, you looked like you should have been in a Wile E. Coyote cartoon. Just they were so big on your head. Hey, before we go, I got to give you some shout-outs. Susan Nelson posted on her Facebook page. She said, like that song, what's the name of it again? And it was Legends in the Game. And who recorded it first? Well, who wrote it and recorded it first, Frankie?
It was all me. I recorded it. You'll laugh, but I recorded it in my – I was racing in Chicago at the time. I wrote and recorded it in my little tiny apartment. And with technology, I had a little four-track digital recorder, and I was able to loop the tracks. And, like, I would play the piano, and then I would play the guitar parts over that, and the bass guitar, and the vocals, and the drums actually was a computer drum machine that I had to program. That took the longest. That I probably spent about 30 hours in programming that. But I recorded the song over a 10-day period. And the idea was that I was so into the whole making this movie, and I was building the equalizers for the movie as well. There was some of the casting directors were trying to get me to be in the movie, but I couldn't because I was racing and I had some good horses to ride. But long story short, I thought, you know, I'm a songwriter. Let me try to pitch a song that maybe they could use if they're looking for, if they're doing a soundtrack. Maybe they need some original music written. So I put that together just as a sample of that I can write. I wasn't trying to sell them on anything other than the lyrics. Well, long story short, they didn't use it. They went with a 1930s theme, which is great. Randy Newman did all the music for them, you know. So you know, can't knock them there. but the song I thought was done dead in the water. Well, it showed up on YouTube with the behind the scenes making of Seabiscuit, and I knew nothing about it. It just showed up as one of the, I guess whoever had anything to do with some of that footage. Had got a hold of the song and use it for there, and that video had like 80,000 hits. So I was able to put together my own. In fact, if anybody wanted to hear it, they could go to YouTube and search Seabiscuit Legend in the Game, and they'll find my video version of it. And which cool part about that, Glenn, is all those scenes are with the Equalizer and Tobey Maguire. They used the Equalizer for the filming of it, and my song's playing behind it. So I the whole thing was just like, wow. I felt so close to Seabiscuit at that point.
That's really cool, Frankie. That is really cool. Now, do you wish that you had you had been in the movie now? Would you have changed that knowing what you know now later on in life?
You know, that's a really tough question, because literally I had three horses that were potentially pointing for the Breeders' Cup. And had I taken off, one thing I would have pay wise, the position in the movie wouldn't have paid much, but man, I sure wish timing wise that everybody asked me, were you in the movie? Were you in the movie? No, I wasn't in the movie, but, and they tried. There was one casting director, bless her heart. She would call me, hey, we're going to shoot in Lexington on September this date. Are you available? No, I can't make it that day, and I mean, I wish I could have, but I just couldn't do it.
I can't believe that you did that in your apartment, and you did all the parts yourself to that. You did a good job, Frankie, with this little four digital tape recorder.
Yeah, it was comical. I was singing. I was afraid the neighbors, like, you know, in the apartment complex there, were going to hear me, not the playing part, but the singing part, because I could play very low levels. But the singing part, you know, you kind of have to belt down
a
little
sing.
Bit. You got to project. Well, I made a tent, like pillows and blankets and a microphone, and had my head buried under there. So if that gives you any vision, If you listen to the song, you probably will never hear the song the same way again, me singing under the pillows and blankets.
That's funny. Now, were you one of those guys? Did people ask you to bring your guitar out at night when you guys were all getting together? Did you do that, or was that something that didn't happen back then when you were in the racing days?
Oh yeah. That happened a lot, and it still happens. I mean, we all the time. We'll be at some friends or doing an event, or someone might be having a fundraiser, and they'll ask me if I'll play, and I'll do acoustic, just me and a guitar and a piano, without a band or anything. I'll play for different events and for friends' parties and stuff. So I still keep up with it. Just I don't work that hard at it though. I usually cram, like, oh, somebody wants me to play, I got to practice, you know, and
right.
I'll practice for 2 days and then I'll play. You know, it's a little scary. It's like.
Well, the next time you guys come down to see us here in Ocala, you have to bring your guitar along, okay?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Frankie. You have a show tomorrow, or Sunday rather?
Yes, sir. We have a show, jockeyworldradio.com. I don't know, you know, usually with we have lots to talk about when there's a major event like the Belmont. So the theme will probably just be the recap of the Belmont and discussing how the race went and some other things. But you never know. We might get somebody famous to call in that perhaps has won the race. You never know. But I'm not saying Mario. I don't have him on speed dial yet, so.
Okay, he'll be kind of busy that day too, I said.
I think so.
Yeah. I just want to remind everybody who to root for.
I'll have another Bowie Meister photo finish. I'll have another.
Just wanted to remind everybody. Well, thank you, Frankie, so much for joining me. We really appreciate it. Remember, everybody, Monday we're off. There won't be a show on Monday, but Tuesday Jamie will be back. The whole gang will be in, and we will get caught up on her trip and talk a little. We'll do our talking about the race. She said she is going to get to watch the race live tomorrow. So we'll get all caught up on Tuesday, and we'll be back to the normal schedule then. And also, get your really bad ads in for next week. We're giving away a great prize, what are they called again, Jennifer? The Summer Winnies, Winnie Warmers. I'd never get the name right.
Summer Winnies. They're for summertime use to keep the insects from chewing on your horse's legs and saving his skin as well as the fit of his horseshoes. Your farrier will thank you.
And you can get those by just sending your entries for Really Bad Ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Put Really Bad Ads in the subject line. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Frankie. Everybody have a great weekend.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Jennifer. Happy Belmont, everybody.
Hey. Neuter and yelled, and I'll have another.